September 11th, perhaps more than any other date in the year, is one that lives in particular infamy, especially within the United States and across the Western world for the Al-Qaeda terrorist attacks that took place across the U.S. East Coast that day. But exactly 22 years later to the date after those attacks, on September 11th, 2023, the same date would deliver the world another monumental tragedy that only managed to capture the world's headlines for a much shorter period of time, but was no less catastrophic in scale on the other side of the world in Libya. Early on the morning of that fateful date, a once-in-a-thousand-year storm dumped an unprecedented level of rainfall across eastern Libya that rapidly filled up the reservoirs behind two dams placed along a seasonal river that led into the Libyan city of Derna, which at that time had a population of around 90,000 people. One after the other, the enormous water loads placed on each of the dams proved too much for them to bear and led to their catastrophic failures, sending a titanic surge of water tumbling down through the valley directly toward the city, as if it were a tsunami heading from within the interior rather than from the sea. At about 3 a.m. early in the morning, with little to no warning, the water crashed into the city as it was sleeping, with apocalyptic results. As much as one quarter of the entire city of Derna was obliterated within minutes. Entire city blocks and buildings were annihilated and swept up by the surge out into the sea. As many as 24,000 people who lived in the city were killed during the disaster. Nearly a third of Derna's entire population immediately before the disaster, which easily made it the deadliest dam collapse disaster of the entire 21st century, and among the deadliest ever seen on record anywhere in human history. And here's how it all happened, and why it all went so horribly wrong that night. Derna itself is a city on the northeastern coast of Libya at the easternmost edge of the Jebel Akhtar region, the rainiest part of Libya and one of the very few forested areas in the country. The Jebel Akhtar region is a highly fertile upland area with high elevation that's cut across by several narrow valleys and seasonal rivers that are known as wadis, which are dry for much of the year and only fill up during storms. One of these seasonal rivers in this location is the Wadi Derna, which begins higher up in the nearby mountains, roughly 800 meters above sea level, before snaking down into the Mediterranean Sea over a 115-kilometer long and very narrow course. Naturally, the Jebel Akhtar region is one of the most densely populated parts of Libya, which is otherwise mostly covered by arid deserts. And so it's long been the population core of eastern Libya, leading to multiple significant settlements in the area like Benghazi, which was settled along the mouth of the seasonal Wadi Derna on the Mediterranean shoreline. The narrow geography of the Wadi Derna and the still arid climate it's located in meant that flash floods through the valley were a frequent problem that Derna's residents furthest downstream had to deal with. The first time that a major flash flood was reported in the Wadi Derna was in 1942 by the German Army's Africa Corps, which reportedly caused them serious losses. Further major flash floods were reported in the area in 1956, 1959, and again in 1968, before the Libyan authorities finally decided to do something about it. Shortly after Muammar Gaddafi came into power in Libya, his government commissioned the help of a Yugoslavian company to come in and build out a series of dams along the Wadi Derna to control the area's flash flooding problem, with the construction taking place between 1973 and 1977. Ultimately, the Yugoslavian company constructed two rock-filled dams along the Wadi Derna at different locations, with different heights and different reservoir capacities. The Al-Bilad Dam nearest to the city of Derna was built smaller at 45 meters in height with a reservoir capacity of 1.5 million cubic meters, while the larger Boum Ansour Dam was constructed further behind, higher up in the mountains at 220 meters above sea level in elevation, with a 75-meter dam height and a reservoir capacity for 22.5 million cubic meters. Both of the dams were essentially constructed with a clay core in the center, with the embankments on both of their sides filled in with rocks and stones. A sturdy configuration, but one that's vulnerable to rapid erosion if water overflows the top of the structure, which would eventually prove to be a part of the dam's ultimate undoings. Back then in the 1970s, the Yugoslavian construction company that was building the dams estimated that the 1 in 1,000 and 1 in 10,000 year flood volumes for the larger Boum Ansour Dam were 14 million cubic meters of water and 22.5 million cubic meters of water respectively, which, as it would ultimately turn out, would prove to be grossly incorrect on September 11th, 2023. So remember these numbers for later. That being said, though, the Yugoslavian construction company also recommended at the time the construction of a third dam along the Wadi Drina, even further upstream from the Bum Ansor Dam, which was never attempted. Had it actually been built, it would have reduced the contributing watershed to the Bum Ansor Dam from 466 square kilometers to only 140 square kilometers, which would have greatly diminished the total load placed upon it decades later during the storm in 2023. Over the years that followed, while Gaddafi was still in power in Libya, there were multiple warning signs concerning the Wadi Drina Dam's reliability and safety. In 1998, 25 years after the dams were completed, there were reports made about significant cracks and other defects that were detected in them. Later in 2003, a Swiss consultancy firm that was hired by the Libyans to study the dams ominously concluded that the Yugoslavian company that had built them had vastly underestimated the once-in-1,000 and once-in-10,000-year flood volumes for the dams, and that their reservoir capacities were designed much smaller than they actually should have been. According to Drina's deputy mayor at the time of the disaster in 2023, the dams along the Wadi Drina had not been maintained for more than 21 years before the disaster, ever since 2002. But much of the reason for that was Libya's own internal chaos that began in the early 2010s. After the Swiss consultancy firm concluded that the dams required urgent maintenance in 2003, the Libyan government eventually contracted a Turkish construction company called Arsol to perform the maintenance work and to build that other third dam in 2007. But multiple delays and disputes over payments ended up stalling the work at the dams, and they didn't manage to get started until 3 years later in 2010. And by then, within only a few months of them getting started, Libya just collapsed into its unprecedented era of chaos that's continued into the present day. As the Arab Spring swept across the Middle East and North Africa, revolts against Gaddafi's more than 40-year-long rule in Libya erupted in February of 2011, which rapidly escalated into full-blown civil war in the country after Gaddafi's troops opened fire on crowds of protesters in the city of Benghazi. Within days of that event, the city of Derna had been taken over by Libyan rebels who were opposed to the Gaddafi government, who called themselves the National Transitional Council, and so they broke the city and its dams away from the central government. Derna would never be retaken by the Gaddafi regime again, and over the next 8 months, Libya would descend into enormous violence between Gaddafi loyalists and rebels that eventually saw NATO initiating a military intervention in the country with a massive aerial bombing campaign that was targeted against Gaddafi's military assets, which enabled the rebels on the ground to overthrow Gaddafi's government by the end of October 2011. Gaddafi himself was later found by the rebels and summarily tortured and executed. While across the 8 month civil war, it's believed that more than 30,000 Libyans were killed and around 50,000 others wounded. During the war, the Turkish construction company that had only just started performing the maintenance work on the Wadi Drina dams a few months previously understandably left the country and ceased all of their operations, leaving all of their equipment and machinery at the construction site behind, which was at some point completely pillaged and looted by rebels. Allegedly, according to a Libyan state-run audit agency, more than $2 million worth of funds were allocated by the new Libyan transitional government to continue the maintenance work on the Wadi Drina dams in 2012 and 2013, but no further work on them was ever initiated, which has led to troubling accusations that those earmarked funds were embezzled by corrupt Libyan government officials instead. And the momentary calm that came over Libya by the end of 2011 following the collapse of the Gaddafi regime would not last for very long either. In early 2014, the Libyan transitional government that was at that time led by Prime Minister Ali Zeidan entered into a renewed contract with the same Turkish construction company to restart their renovation work at the Wadi Drina dams again, with the Libyan government agreeing to financially compensate the company for all of its stolen and lost equipment. But this time, within only weeks of that new deal being signed, Libya would be thrown right back into chaos again. In May of that year, a disputed election in the country led to Libya shattering into two different rival governments and the resumption of civil war in the country between them. A Western government based in Tripoli that was recognized by the UN, and an Eastern government based in Tobruk that had the support of the Libyan National Army. Ali Zeidan, the prime minister who had signed the renewed maintenance contract with the Turkish construction company, was also overthrown by his own government and fled the country in exile to Morocco. Meanwhile, the security situation within the city of Derna itself would rapidly deteriorate even further, Within only months of the Second Libyan Civil War beginning, ISIS-affiliated militants in the east of Libya were able to capitalize on the power vacuum that had emerged and managed to seize control over the city of Derna by October of 2014, rendering it impossible for any construction company to resume maintenance work on the Wadi Derna dams nearby. Derna then became the epicenter of ISIS's operations in Libya, who ruled the city uncontested until a coalition of rival radical Islamist groups within the city, led by Al-Qaeda, who called themselves the Shura Council, started a revolt against ISIS's rule in the city in June of 2015. Nearly a year later, by April of 2016, the Al-Qaeda-led Shura Council had finally emerged victorious and had pushed ISIS out of the city, which then led to Derna becoming dominated by Al-Qaeda instead. Not that much better to deal with from the perspective of a foreign construction company who wanted to resume maintenance work on the dams within the city. Derna then became a hotbed of militant Al-Qaeda activity and operations, from which Al-Qaeda organized multiple attacks on both Libya and Egypt. It didn't take very long for the Libyan National Army, which was led by Field Marshal Khalifa Haftar, and which was backing the Eastern Tobruk-based government in the Greater Second Civil War, to decide on a plan to drive Al-Qaeda out of the city. So in August of 2016, merely months after Al-Qaeda had pushed ISIS out of the city, Khalifa Haftar led the Libyan National Army into beginning a siege of Derna. The siege intensified in 2017 when the Shura Council within Derna shot down one of his fighter jets and captured its pilot alive, only to publicly execute him later, drawing Haftar's fury. By May of 2018, after being under siege by the Libyan National Army for the past 21 months, Khalifa Haftar declared that his efforts to reach a peaceful conclusion with the Shura Council held up in Derna had reached a dead end and that an attack on the city was the only path forward. He ordered his forces to begin advancing into Derna and so began a ferocious urban house-to-house fight in the city between them and the Shura Council. By the end of June in 2018, Haftar had declared that his forces had taken full control over the city, but Al-Qaeda and the Shura Council continued waging a violent insurgency in Derna for several more months, until they finally surrendered in February of 2019. Derna had therefore been the site of heavy fighting and frequently contested control between ISIS, Al-Qaeda, and the Libyan National Army for nearly 5 years between 2014 and 2019. And so, understandably, no construction or maintenance work on the dams leading into the city was ever resumed despite the signed contract that happened at the beginning of 2014. And by this point in early 2019, even after Derna was finally firmly under the control of the Libyan National Army, Libya was still split between two rival warring governments, what would eventually be known as the Government of National Unity, or the GNU, based in the West, that was the recognized government of Libya by the UN, and the Government of National Stability, or the GNS, based in the East, that was increasingly being dominated by the Libyan National Army and its leader Khalifa Haftar, who was increasingly taking on the role of a kind of warlord in Libya. The fighting between these two sides in Libya would continue on for more than another year after the Libyan National Army's capture of Derna, until October of 2020. When they finally agreed on a ceasefire after the past 6.5 years of civil war that had killed another 15,000 people in the country. The ceasefire left Libya split almost in half between the two rival governments. And throughout the conflict, the Turkish government came to steadily back the Western GNU government for geopolitical reasons. In early 2020, when the civil war in Libya was still ongoing, Turkey sent dozens of advisors to the GNU along with aerial and naval support, and facilitated the transfer of around 18,000 mercenaries from Syria, all to fight on the GNU's behalf on the ground against Khalifa Haftar's forces. Because of this, all of the territory in eastern Libya that was dominated by Haftar's forces, including Derna, began evicting Turkish companies because they perceived them as being potentially spies and sympathetic to the rival government in western Libya, which, of course, included the Turkish company that had been contracted to resume the maintenance work on the dams by Derna. All of this geopolitical chaos ultimately meant that the dams by Derna, which were already reported to be in a state of disrepair as early as 1998, were basically left without hardly any maintenance at all for decades. And despite signing a contract with the Libyan government to resume work on the dams in 2014, the Turkish construction company Arsal never again returned to Derna after years and years of chaos in the region prevented them from ever being able to do so. Even after the ceasefire came into effect in Libya in October of 2020 that ended the outright fighting across the country, lingering political uncertainty within Libya and the COVID-19 pandemic prevented any construction company from still being able to return back to Derna. Even companies who might have been interested had multiple legal and political challenges to work through. From whom would they acquire permission to resume maintenance work on the Derna dams? From the Western-based GNU government in Libya that was recognized by the UN but that also didn't actually control Derna? Or from the Eastern-based GNS government that theoretically controlled Derna? Or from the warlord Khalifa Haftar? Who is the actual de facto authority who had the final say on what actually happened in the East in Derna? All of this made the political situation rather unclear in the East even after the ceasefire had ended the civil war. And that strained the ability for any company to effectively operate in the East. And then, in September of 2023, 13 years after the Turkish construction company had briefly carried out some limited maintenance work on the Derna dams back in 2010, came the storm that would ultimately destroy the dams, called Storm Daniel. Storm Daniel initially formed over the Mediterranean's central Ionian Sea in early September of 2023, before it first moved over to the Balkans, where it caused extensive damage and loss of life before it then shifted towards Libya's central Gulf of Sirtia on the 9th of September. Record summer temperatures had meant that the waters in this part of the Mediterranean were unusually warm for this time of year, which fueled the power of Storm Daniel as it approached Libya and turbocharged it into a phenomenon that's known as a metacane. A sort of cyclone with the characteristics of a hurricane that occasionally form in the Mediterranean region, which is where the term gets its name from. On the 10th of September, the metacane made landfall in eastern Libya near the city of Benghazi, with cyclone-rated winds that reached upwards of 80 miles an hour, and it dumped an absolutely massive amount of rainfall all across the region. The Albedo weather station, located right here only about 20 kilometers away from the extent of the Wadi Derna basin, recorded a whopping 414.1 millimeters of rainfall within only 24 hours between the 10th and 11th of September during the storm. Its highest ever 24-hour measurement ever on record. Now, in order for you to understand how massive of an amount of rainfall that is for this part of the world, consider that the usual annual rainfall recorded here throughout an entire year is usually somewhere between 280 to 500 millimeters, meaning that Derna received an entire year's worth of its usual rainfall in only about 24 hours. The frequency of these kinds of storms impacting the area around Derna has been the subject of much academic debate since then. According to one academic paper published by the journal Nature in 2025, this level of rainfall unleashed by Storm Daniel that day was indeed a freak natural occurrence, with an expected frequency of more than once in 1,000 years. However, according to another academic paper that utilized different methodologies that was published by the journal Science, also in 2025, this level of rainfall could have actually had an expected frequency of about once every few decades or so. Meaning that depending on who you ask, this storm was either a freak once in a thousand year event, or it was a more routine once every few decades kind of storm that should have been more properly anticipated. Either way, the amount of water that the storm dumped into the Wadi Derna overnight between the 10th and 11th of September that year seems to have far exceeded the dam's design specifications. Remember the numbers that I mentioned earlier for the reservoir capacities behind the two dams that the Yugoslavian construction company had designed for them back in the 1970s. The smaller Al Bilad Dam closest to the city of Derna had a reservoir capacity of 1.5 million cubic meters of water, while the larger Boum and Sor Dam located further upstream on the Wadi Derna had a reservoir capacity of 22.5 million cubic meters, which the Yugoslavian construction company who built them in the 1970s estimated to be equivalent to a once-in-10,000-year storm volume in the region. Overnight, between the 10th and 11th of September, Storm Daniel might have dropped as much as 100 million cubic meters of water into the Wadi Derna Valley, nearly five times greater than the supposedly once-in-10,000-year reservoir capacity of the larger Boum and Sor Dam was designed to handle. Libyan officials who were operating the dam that night would later report that the Boum and Sor Dam only had a maximum water discharge capacity of just 170 cubic meters per second. But then in order to fully discharge all of the water that was entering into the Wadi Derna that night, they would have had to discharge about 1,200 cubic meters of water per second instead. Seven times greater than what the dam was actually designed to do. These enormous pressures on the dams, combined with the decades of lack of upkeep and maintenance on them, would ultimately spell their doom. The reservoirs in both of the dams began filling up around 8 p.m. on September 10th, But by midnight, they were still contained and only about halfway full, according to later eyewitness testimony. But after midnight, as the storm intensified and waters began arriving from further upstream, they began rapidly filling up. Within only another half hour in the early morning of September the 11th, the Boom and Soar Dam's reservoir became completely filled up at around 12:30 a.m., and the water began spilling over the dam's top, while the lower Al-Bilad Dam's reservoir had also filled up by 12:50 a.m. and began overtopping as well. These overtoppings of the dams began gradually eroding away the dam's bases, steadily undermining their structural integrities to the point that would eventually lead to their catastrophic collapses. By 2 a.m. in the morning, the water volume in the reservoir behind the larger Boom and Soar Dam had reached a critical level, and was a full 2 meters higher than the actual top of the dam was, leading to 2 meters worth of water overtopping, spilling over the dam's wall over onto the other side. The security that was present at the dam had noticed what was going on and reported it to the relevant authorities. But the messaging that was carried out by the GNS government in Derna that day was mixed and confusing. Immediately prior to the arrival of Storm Daniel on the 9th of September, the Derna city authorities had imposed a curfew and ordered all of the city's residents to remain in place within their homes, unwittingly concentrating virtually the entire city's population directly in the path of the disaster that would soon take place. Then, the following day on the 10th of September, other city authorities in Derna began calling for residents of some of the houses on the coastline to begin evacuating, presenting a series of contradictory orders. Due to Derna's recent violent history and the fact that the GNS government had only established control over it 4 years previously after a years-long siege, a lot of Derna's residents also didn't exactly trust the local authorities' advice. Though it appears that in most cases, the government ordered the residents of the city to shelter in place, while in reality, they should have almost all evacuated completely. At approximately 2:40 a.m. on the morning of September 11th, after being ground down under the overwhelming and building pressure of the overflowing reservoir behind it for the past 2.5 hours, during which the city could have been evacuated but wasn't, the upper Boom and Soar Dam finally buckled and catastrophically collapsed, sending a massive flood surge of approximately 30 million cubic meters of water thundering downstream the Wadi Derna directly towards the city of Derna and its 90,000 inhabitants further downstream, roughly equivalent to about 30 Empire State Buildings all full of water. The surge methodically poured down the rest of the valley as if it were a funnel, concentrating the water volume together as if it were a tsunami over the next 20 minutes, before it ultimately smashed into the lower Al-Bilad Dam next at approximately 3 a.m. in the morning, immediately shattering it and rushing into the densely populated city of Derna itself, where nearly everyone there was still busy sleeping. As though it were a monster, the wall of water then tore through the unexpected sleeping city to utterly cataclysmic effect, in a disaster whose scale has rarely ever been experienced. Before and after photographs taken of this city are a good way to contextualize the scale of what took place early that morning. Entire city blocks of Derna were obliterated by the surge, their residents immediately overwhelmed by the water as they slept and carried out to the sea. Thousands of buildings in the city were destroyed or damaged within only minutes by the water's relentless fury. All of the bridges that crossed the Wadi Derna within the city were crushed and wiped out, while 5 out of 7 of the roads that led into the city were also destroyed as well, leaving the city geographically split in half and largely isolated in the aftermath of the disaster that enormously complicated the future search and rescue and recovery operations. In total, it is estimated that around 1/4 of all the buildings in Derna simply disappeared within minutes during the disaster, with large sections of the city being dragged out by the waters into the Mediterranean Sea. An unknown number of Derna's residents were carried out by the floodwaters along with their buildings out into the Mediterranean Sea as well. Over the following several days, multiple naval search and rescue teams that were dispatched to recover bodies and find survivors found hundreds of bodies that had washed away as far as 20 kilometers away from the city. Almost miraculously, one living survivor from the disaster was actually found and rescued the next day after having somehow drifted about 11 nautical miles off of the coast of Derna. Total estimates of the number of people who died in Derna that morning are disputed, but everybody agrees that the number ranges into the thousands, with lower estimates pointing to around 11,000 and higher estimates up to as many as 24,000 or more. Meaning that on the higher end, as much as nearly one-third of Derna's population may have died during the disaster, while most of the rest of the survivors were rendered homeless and temporarily displaced. Put another way, the disaster that struck Derna in the early morning of September 11th, 2023, killed more Libyans within a few minutes than the entire Second Civil War across the entire country killed over 6.5 years between 2014 and 2020. Derna, a major city of 90,000 people whose founding dated back to the ancient Greeks, was almost completely destroyed. It seemed that the disaster was ultimately the result of multiple compounding factors. When the dams were initially built by the Yugoslavian construction company back in the 1970s, they were not designed to handle the volume of water that was dumped on them by Storm Daniel in 2023, which has led to accusations that the calculations that went into constructing them in the first place were faulty to begin with. However, some researchers into the disaster have given the Yugoslavian builder some slack, as it would have been difficult for them to have predicted the course of global climate change that has taken place since then. Storm Daniel and the Metacane it evolved into in 2023 was turbocharged by the all-time high record water temperature in the Mediterranean Sea that year, which contributed to the very heavy volumes of rainfall that were dumped across the region that night, and would have been difficult to foresee during the dam's construction process back in the mid-1970s. Meaning that their original calculations maybe should have been updated and fixed in hindsight. But fixing those mistakes was difficult in Libya for decades, because Libya has been continually enveloped with deep-seated political chaos ever since 2011 that prevented any maintenance and renovation work on the dams for 12 years leading up to the disaster. The timing of Libya's work with a construction company from Turkey was about as terrible as it possibly could have been in hindsight, with them starting work on the Derna dams in 2010, only months before the country's civil war started, and then them signing a renewed contract with the company again in early 2014, only for a second civil war in the country to erupt again only a few weeks later. Millions of dollars worth of funding that was dispersed for the dam's maintenance also never amounted to anything, leading to the troubling possibility that funds for the dam's repairs were also simply embezzled. The disaster therefore appears to have been the result of decades of neglect towards the dams, years of internal political chaos, incorrect assumptions that went into the dam's initial construction, climate change, and internal government corruption, all of which produced an enormous human tragedy in the early morning hours of September the 11th, 2023. Interestingly, in one of the academic papers written about this disaster, the one that was published in the journal Science, the researchers involved concluded that the disaster that struck Derna that morning would have actually been far less severe had the dams never actually even been constructed in the first place. Their conclusion was that it was ultimately the collapse of the upper Bumansor Dam and the tsunami-like surge of water that it sent through the Wadi Derna Valley that caused the most destruction in the city of Derna below. They ran several simulations of the disaster with the dams being present and other simulations that assumed there were not any dams, and they concluded that without that massive surge of water that resulted from the dam's collapse in the real world, the level of destruction inflicted would have been much less. They found that if there had never been any dams at all, the peak water discharge rate flowing through the Wadi Derna would have been approximately 8 times less, while the area within the city of Derna that flooded was 67% larger with the dams being present. We might never know if their calculations were ultimately right, but multiple Libyan officials have been arrested and jailed over their alleged responsibilities for the disaster taking place since. 12 former Libyan officials who were responsible for managing the country's dams were arrested and later convicted by Libyan courts in 2024, and were sentenced to prison terms that range from 9 to 27 years behind bars, without their identities being publicly revealed. The date of September 11th carries with it a heavy legacy of tragedy, both in the United States for the Al-Qaeda terrorist attacks of 2001, and in Libya for the catastrophic Derna Dam collapses of 2023, two events that both resulted in the deaths of thousands of innocent people. But the same date also bears another notable event of infamy that involves both the United States and Libya alike. Precisely 11 years after the 9/11 attacks in America, and 11 years before the dams at Derna and Libya collapsed, On September the 11th of 2012, just 250 kilometers away from Derna in the Libyan city of Benghazi, hundreds of armed militants belonging to the radical Islamist group known as Ansar al-Sharia launched a coordinated attack against the U.S. diplomatic outpost there and sparked one of the most infamous and controversial events in modern U.S. history in the process. The overnight siege and attack on the compound ultimately resulted in the deaths of four American diplomatic and CIA officials, including who was then the acting U.S. ambassador to Libya, J. Christopher Stevens. The first U.S. ambassador to be killed while in office in decades, and only the eighth U.S. ambassador to ever be killed while in office in the nation's entire history. In the aftermath of the attack, Benghazi became a sort of byword for political scandal in the United States. No less than 10 separate investigations into the nature of the attack were conducted by the U.S. government, none of which ever conclusively proved any wrongdoing on the part of the Obama administration and its officials who were in charge at the time. Most Americans are probably very familiar with the Benghazi attack, but most of us are probably not very aware of the precise hour-by-hour events that unfolded that night during the attack, the details of what exactly happened, and why everything went so wrong that led to the first U.S. ambassador in decades getting killed. That's why I made an entire in-depth video covering everything that went down in Benghazi that night and why it became so controversial in my Modern Conflict series, which I create new videos in every single month, taking deeper dives into more recent, controversial, and darker subject material surrounding modern wars, operations, and conflicts. Over the past 4 years, I've personally created nearly 50 total episodes in Modern Conflicts covering topics as diverse as the U.S.'s manhunt for Osama bin Laden and the pathway that led up to that point in the 9/11 attacks. Another hour-by-hour analysis into the events that took place during Hamas's attack on Israel on October 7th and Israel's subsequent full-scale invasion of Gaza, along with how the U.S. led a coalition that eventually destroyed ISIS across Iraq and Syria, how the civil wars in Libya unfolded that led to the Derna dams getting into such a state of disrepair in the first place, and dozens of other episodes with brand new ones like the Benghazi embassy siege and attack coming out every single month, all exclusively on Nebula. Because of the inherently violent, controversial, and recent nature of discussing the details of what's arguably the most controversial foreign policy event in all of modern U.S. history, this episode covering the Benghazi embassy attack would never work on YouTube, because it would instantly be demonetized and age-restricted, which means that YouTube's algorithm, which is based on showing you ads, would never be incentivized to actually show the video to you or promote it. I already deal with a very large number of my videos on YouTube getting demonetized and age-restricted as they are, and that's why I upload all of my episodes in Modern Conflicts exclusively to Nebula, and why signing up to Nebula is the absolute best thing that you can do to support me and my channel, and you'll get access to way more content than just my own exclusive Modern Conflicts series as well. Because the best part about Nebula is that it's jointly co-owned by myself and hundreds of other independent creators that empowers us to make the projects that we're deeply excited about without any fear of being censored or demonetized like we are on YouTube. And that's why there's tons of other new unique content on Nebula that's coming out all the time too that you'll also love. Like Bobby Broccoli's new full-length documentary 17 Pages that covers one of the largest scientific controversies of the 20th century. NEO's Under Exposure series that includes episodes on how the Twin Towers in New York were built and the Kuwait oil fires during the first Gulf War. And Lindsay Ellis, who now exclusively posts all of her new videos to Nebula instead of YouTube. And so many others. I also know that there's a lot of streaming platforms out there right now and you don't want to get stuck with another monthly cost to keep track of. But I also know that if you've watched this all the way through to the end, there is so much content on Nebula that you'll also love as well. And so much more coming out with every new month that you could consider a lifetime membership to Nebula. You just pay once and then you'll get lifetime access to everything that I and hundreds of other creators will ever produce on Nebula for as long as we both last, and then you'll never have to worry about a recurring subscription or ads ever again. That is the single best way possible to support what I'm doing here on Real Life Lore. But even if you'd rather not make that large of an upfront commitment, you can still greatly help support me by signing up for a yearly or monthly subscription to Nebula as well, which you can also get for a fantastic deal with 40% off by scanning the QR code or clicking the button here on your screen right now, or by following the link that's down below in the description. any of which will also get you access to everything on Nebula for the very low price of just $3 per month, or $36 for a full year. I hope that you'll consider signing up, and as always, thank you so much for watching.